to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank. Sorry, I'm a little slow on the uptake because I'm stressed out.
I know. It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John, did you hear that the Pfizer vaccine has been approved not just for emergency use, but just as a normal medicine now? Unfortunately, Eminem still can't get it.
Why is that?
Because he only gets one shot.
Oh. I mean, alternately, it could have been Alexander Hamilton. There's been a lot of people who only got one shot over the years and who did not want to throw it away.
Yeah. Well, I think Alexander Hamilton got several shots. He just didn't throw any of them away.
Arguably.
Or was it his one shot?
Well, look, I'm not an expert in Hamilton. All I know is that the line is, I'm not throwing away my shot, not I'm not throwing away my multiple shots. So
it's true. I'm not throwing my shots.
Anyway, yeah. However many shots you need, please get them.
Yes.
I'm done with this whole situation. I'm also done with having my old YouTube account that I used to upload private family videos to hacked. That has really been a day ruiner. And I'll tell you one thing.
It's such a pain.
And one thing I'm not particularly sympathetic to at the moment is the hacker's relentless reminders that he is a good guy, which is the phrase he keeps using.
Look, I could have done so much worse than that.
Yeah. That is his perspective. He's like, I'm a good guy because I could have done something worse. And my perspective is that, like, the real good guys.
Right. That's true of every bad guy. Every bad guy could have been worse.
The real good guys don't generally brag about being good guys to people they've just hacked.
Oh God, it's not the first time that we've had a situation like that. Though the last time it happened, they were gooder than this guy, where they only left comments as us, rather than making private videos public.
Yeah, I mean they did apologize for it. Anyway, let's talk about something else because I haven't been able to do anything else all day, which has been very frustrating because obviously, like, this person didn't necessarily know about my week schedule when they decided to hack me at 5:30 in the morning on a Monday.
Now everything is late.
Yeah, if I could.
Everything for the rest of the week is late.
If I could have picked a week to be hacked, it would not be the week of my birthday and 17 other deadlines. So,
yeah,
but you know what, Hank, you don't get to choose if you get hurt in this world, but you do have some say in who hurts you. Specifically, I should have turned on two-factor authentication in that 15-year-old YouTube channel.
John, congratulations on being a 44-year-old. What's it like? Tell me so that I can get ready in the future.
That's not great. I'll be honest. This is the first birthday.
You get hacked. First thing, you get hacked. Everybody, when they turn 44.
This is the first birthday I've had where for some reason, it didn't bother me at all to turn 40 or to turn 42. Those both seemed like the ages of young people. But this birthday is the first one where I've, felt that thing that all humans feel. And it's so cliche. Like, one of my big problems, actually, with getting older is that all the cliches are true. You know, that, like, the stupid things people say that are uninteresting and extremely superficial nonetheless do happen to you and, like, do occur to you and you do think those things. And I really dislike, like, having to have thoughts about myself and the universe that are super cliche and obvious, like, so I'm not having it. I'll be honest, it's not the worst birthday I've had because like a lot of people, I turned 13 once, but it's the worst birthday I've had in a while. I think it's my second pandemic birthday, and I was kind of hoping I was only gonna have one, and I think I might have a third pandemic birthday. So
it could be. I am also, because I've known people who are currently my age who have died, accidents, but of diseases.
I mean, I know people who are my age who've died of COVID.
Yes. I have gotten to the point now where I am thinking about my mortality, like maybe the amount that you did when you were at 13.
Oh, yeah.
And It's a lot. It's a lot. It's like double or triple what it was 10 years ago. And, you know, not multiple times a day, but maybe multiple times a week. Do I think like, oh, God, it would be really inconvenient for everyone around if I kicked it.
Especially if you kicked it before signing that will.
We're really close.
Great.
We're really close. Basically, he's just getting the papers drawn up. I know that this has been a multi-year joke here on the podcast, but it is also a multi-year series of mistakes I have made where I'm just like...
I thought you were going to say it's a multi-year process, and no, I want to encourage all of our listeners that it just isn't.
It doesn't take that long. unless you just stop answering emails for months and months at a time.
Yeah. I have noticed that you have that habit, Hank. Like, there are basically two kinds of emails that you get from Hank Green. One is within 30 seconds of sending an email to him, you get a reply. Yeah. And the other is six months later.
That's the one you want.
And the the best thing about the one that is 6 months later, because Hank and I correspond a fair amount and we're CC'd on a lot of the same emails, is that when you get one 6 months later, you also get like 42 others. So you know exactly how much time Hank put into the email, because you get one email and then 4 minutes later, you get a second email. And then 2 minutes after that, you get a third email.
Yeah.
And you should really use the like snooze or whatever system on Hank. So, I shouldn't say that we use lest someone hack me. Please don't hack people. Like, even if you can, don't.
Can I tell you about my most successful hacking, John? As a child, I hacked a website.
I'm going to be so mad. I'm already mad. You with your gray hat on. What is your gray hat hacking story, Hank, that where you can portray yourself as a hero by retroactively fitting your ideology to your urges?
It was more, I considered myself a kind of chaotic good agent or chaotic neutral. Let's not use any good.
Okay.
I ran the Mars web ring when I was in high school.
I remember. It was huge.
Do you remember what web rings were?
Of course. That was like where you would basically advertise other people's websites that were also about Mars, and they would advertise yours via a ring.
Right. And so you could like quick click. There was like arrows, and several people would have the web ring thing at the bottom of the website. And then you click the right arrow and you'd go to another website about the same topic. And this was before search engines were any good. So if you wanted to be like into dogs, you could be in the dog web ring. You'd be on a website about dogs at the bottom. It's like, oh, I want to see another website about dogs. I'll click the arrow and go to the next one.
Yeah. It was also in the days when websites ended, you know, so you'd get to the end of the website and you'd be like, oh, I'm not done.
Yeah.
I need to be distracted more. Is there another website? And it turns out that there was.
Yeah. You could reach the end of the ring as well. Like there is.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, you could. I mean, like back then Yahoo had an index of all the web of like all the websites that were at least indexed on Yahoo. And like you could do all of them, you know, like if you really tried, like you could have gotten to the end of the internet in 1994, 1995.
Yeah. So that was around when I ran the Mars web ring. And part of that is that I, for some reason, had access to the database of all of everybody's login information, which was not encrypted. And so it was almost as if I had intentionally created the Mars web ring in order to just get access to people's login information. And so if they use the same login information for the Mars web ring that they did for their like FTP server, I could go on their FTP servers. And so to a few different Mars websites, I put Marvin the Martian, just photoshopped him into the images, like random images on the site, so that Marvin the Martian would suddenly appear. And people would be like, what happened? And then they would change it back. And then I would put him back just so that they knew that the world was a goofy place.
Not goofy, dangerous. A place where your own information is never safe.
Yeah.
And where there is no privacy, and privacy is a complete illusion.
Yeah.
And humans aren't even allowed to have private thoughts that disagree with the social order, lest they get exposed via a hack. So, yeah, anyway, welcome to, I was like, man, this dystopia is going to suck in 50 years, but it turns out it already sucks.
Yeah. It's not great.
Hank, the only thing that can improve my mood is reading questions from our listeners, which, by the way, I can only do for probably the first 20 minutes of the podcast because I thought I had a computer charger here, but I don't. And my computer's going to run out of battery.
Okay, well,
so
I'll
ask the first few questions.
Okay.
This first question comes from Emily, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, I recently had an encounter with a desert stink beetle in my home. And in my sheer panic, I told myself, it's more scared of you than you are of it. What's something that we are more scared of than it is of us?" I have a good answer, Emily. It's surveillance capitalism. It's not scared of us at all.
No. Yeah, no, there are many things that do not have any emotions at all that I am very afraid of. And I'm afraid of many human emotions more than they are afraid of me. And my own self. Even my own emotions, I'm often more afraid of them.
Wait, whoa, whoa. You're telling me that you're more afraid of you than you are of you.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to get at.
I think you've misunderstood the question. I mean, that's deep. That's real deep. And it's too deep. I can't handle that level of depth right now. I can't go there today.
Uh-huh.
Are there animals, hey?
Oh, sure.
Non-human animals that we are more scared of than they are scared of us? I think the answer is a definite yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, almost anything bigger than us. Any of the larger crocodilians, John?
Yeah.
I think probably, I think maybe as a, maybe if their moms and their kids are nearby, they might be a little bit anxious, but like not scared. I'm, and also my fear of them is very high. So that threshold is high.
Yeah. Yeah. I also feel extremely afraid of alligators, like a lot of kids who grew up in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's mostly a rational fear. Like, I don't want to get into the debate about whether animals have souls.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I know for a dead certain fact is that alligators don't have souls. Like if you look, I mean, Hank, you've looked an alligator in the eye, right? I mean, there's nothing there, man. There's nothing there.
Okay. All right. Well, look, that's your take and you can have it.
We're going to get so many emails from people who have like pet alligators who are like, my alligator cuddles with me at night. And when I feel sad, my alligator like crawls over and gives me a little polite bite on the tip of the nose. But no, my opinion is that every animal has a soul.
Okay, except?
Except for many reptiles.
But not all. I every experience I've ever had with a constrictor, I have been more afraid of it than it is of me. I can guarantee that. I know that I shouldn't be afraid. I know that these are animals that have been trained to behave well around people. And yet when they are on me, I'm like, I really don't want to have to pull that thing off of my face.
I think I'm more afraid of most people than they are of me.
Well, you know that's because you're you. Like, yeah, yeah.
I think if I walk into any bar, which first off, that's not going to happen
been a while now.
But assume a world where I walk into a bar and everybody turns to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody in that bar is less afraid of me than I am of them.
Like yeah.
Every
well,
single
yeah, that's
person.
Yeah. So you've asked the wrong person, Emily. I might be the better brother to ask. Llamas, I am so afraid of, and I can't tell you why. It's just the way that they look at me, but they do not seem at all shy around me.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, Hank, I think that stink bug might be less afraid of me
definitely.
Than I am of it.
Yeah. Like, absolutely. Because,
that stink bug is good. That stink bug isn't worried about me. It's thinking about other stuff.
Yeah.
Stink bug stuff.
Yeah, there's a spider. Actually,
living and dying.
I just saw a spider on my ceiling, and I am definitely more afraid of it than it is of me, because it doesn't even know I'm here. Bah!
Am I at the very bottom of the fear pyramid? Am I the lowest rung?
You've just been lied to the whole time. It turns out you are more afraid of everything than it is of you.
Of the fearsome pyramid? Is that possible that I'm at the very bottom, the last last creature on earth, the most afraid? No, squirrels. I am the...
yeah.
I think there are squirrels that are more afraid of me. Oh, uh-huh. God. You know, Hank, I was feeling so bad and I was in such a bad mood. And then I remembered my all-time favorite Onion headline, last moments of roadkill squirrel, frantic, comma, indecisive. I like to remember that because almost all of my decisions under stress are also frantic and indecisive.
Oh, God. I have also had a stressful start to the week, John.
Oh, and good.
I'm done with it.
I didn't even ask you how your week was because I was in, I'm sorry.
Yeah, John Land.
I'll confess to being a little self-absorbed right now. Why is your week stressful?
Oh.
It's just begun, Hank. It's like we're 30 minutes into it.
It's just, it's like normal, like business contract stuff, John. The stuff that I don't talk about in public because it is both extremely unrelatable and boring.
Oh, God, it is so boring. But it's important. All right, Hank, I'm going to ask you another question. And this one is also of real interest to me. It comes from Rachel, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, often when I get spam text messages, they're addressed to Cameron. This happens even if they're from different numbers. Mm. But my name is Rachel. Mm. None of my family or friends are named Cameron. Who is Cameron? Have I been renamed by the spam text gods without my knowledge? Please help. Rachel. Or is it Cameron?"
Well, you may be Cameron or Cameron. Some person named Cameron either mistyped or intentionally wrote the wrong phone number when signing up for a service that Cameron knew was likely to result in a great deal of spam.
Well, Hank, it's funny you should say that because in the last 24 hours, I have received, I will read you two of the text, the spam text messages I have received in the last 24 hours. Text number one. "William, we accidentally surcharged your phone bill last month. Please, your reimbursement here." Now,
I did not.
Now, let me read you another one. I got to get there. Hank.
No. No, I did not. I don't even know your phone number.
We're up against our big end-of-month deadline and falling behind on the grassroots support needed to fully mobilize.
I promise.
Well, I am both William and Hank, so Rachel Cameron and I have something in common.
You and Rachel have something in common, and you're saying I and Cameron have something in common.
That's
John,
right.
John, I literally don't know if I could tell you your phone number.
Well, I don't think you have to tell me my phone number. I think you just had to tell one spammer my phone number. You just had to know my phone number on a day when you were being asked if you wanted to join a mailing list and you thought, "No, I don't." And then you were like, "Whatever shall I do?"
I can think of. No, I would just do my number with one number changed. That's how you get a Cameron situation with some stranger, not me. Fascinating, though. This is fascinating that somehow they have gotten confused between the two of us. So, like, there is some way, like, look, we operate in a lot of the same spaces on the internet. They just got confused in whatever data gathering system they used.
Hey, William, our big sale this weekend starts Thursday with hundreds of items marked up to 50% off. That's another text message I received this week.
Weird. That sounds, where's that from? Is that local to Indianapolis? Because
No, it was, I'm not going to click the link, Hank. I already got hacked this week.
They didn't tell you what company it even was? You have to click the link to find out where the sale is?
Hank, because you have used Venmo for over a year, please claim your $200 gift card from We.
From We?
And then I was able to, put together that they meant us, but they wrote We, which is one of the ways I know that probably isn't from Venmo.
Wow, that is weird.
Again, I did not click that link.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Rachel, Cameron, we are in the same boat, and I think we're in the same boat for the same reason, which is that Hank shared our phone number against our will.
That's what I do. I do it to Rachel. I do it to John. I do it to everybody. It's, look, I got to earn money somehow, John.
You're just selling phone numbers to people with really poor grammar. All right, Hank, let's answer another question. I've still got some computer power, so it's on me. Ava writes, "Dear John and Hank, could one of you please explain why Jeff Bezos can't give everyone $1 billion? Because to me, it seems like that would work, but I'm not very good at math." This is a great question, Ava.
Okay.
And there is, like, a lot of confusion about this, to be fair. Like, there are a lot of people saying that there are individuals on Earth who could end world hunger or who could end poverty. And this is in no way to take away the unmet obligations that the richest people in the world, I think, have to the communities that have so massively enriched them. But Jeff Bezos is very, very wealthy, but he could only make 200 people billionaires.
Yeah, right.
And for that matter, he could only make, he could only give $1 million to 200,000 people. Now,
it's a lot
that's
of people.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
That's a lot of millions of dollars, more millions of dollars than probably anyone should have. But it is less than 0.1% of the population of the United States. So if Jeff Bezos gave out all of his wealth in an equal way to everyone living on Earth, everyone would get about $30.
So in essence, we've all given Jeff Bezos, we've all given one man $30, which is a lot.
I would argue that it's a little bit too much. and I would like to reclaim some of it in the form of taxation.
Yes.
Let's move on.
John, this next question comes from Olivia, who asks, Dear Hank and John, since plants and trees create oxygen, I've accepted that is true, even though I don't really understand it. Is there less oxygen where plants don't grow, like deserts or the tundra? Love ya, Olivia. Nice.
It's good.
I didn't get it until I said it. The air moves around real good. Air moves around real good and fast. And there are, like, there are places where you can see elevated concentrations, and they do this, like, you can see, like, cool maps that NASA has that show the different concentrations of different molecules moving around the Earth, particularly because we pay a lot of attention to where oxygen is generated, because it means that carbon is captured, usually, when that's happening. But it doesn't take long for it to get spread out pretty good, because there's wind. Mostly there's wind. There's all these like pressure dynamics where hot air at the surface floats up to the where it's cold, and that causes all kinds of wild perturbations of the atmosphere. And then you have Coriolis effects and stuff that give it a good, it basically there's the Earth is just a giant cocktail shaker, and the just like when you're mixing a drink, all the gin gets spread out, the oxygen's getting spread out too. Luckily, otherwise there would be some places on Earth where you'd be like, ah, suddenly I can't breathe too good.
I mean, we'd also have a bunch of other problems if there was no wind.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be huge. In fact, on the space station where there is no wind, this will actually happen. People can exhale a bubble of carbon dioxide around them, and they start to get really stuffy and sort of uncomfortably deprived of oxygen. And so they astronauts on the space station will have fans in their little sleepy cubbies to make sure that the air gets circulated.
That reminds me, actually, that the final, I think, at least for now, episode of the Anthropocene Reviewed has just come out as this podcast is being uploaded. It is about the first work of art made from outer space in March of 1965 by the cosmonaut Alexei Leonov. And if you want to learn way more about that space mission, Voskhod 2, and the drawing of an orbital sunrise that has become very important to me, you can listen to the Anthropocene Reviewed wherever you get your podcast, provided that you can figure out how to spell it, which I can't, even after all this time. But yeah, it's a wild story, Hank. The first art made in space very nearly stayed in space.
Oh, well, that's a good teaser.
Yeah, I poured everything I had into that one. I was just thinking about why we make art and what we give up to make it, and we give up a lot sometimes. All right, Hank, here's another question. It's from Becca. She writes, Dear John and Hank, a few days ago I posted on Facebook asking if anyone had a high chair I could use for my five-month-old. My host mother that I had stayed with in 2015 replied that she had one I could have and asked if I wanted her to drop it off this weekend. The only thing is, she lives in Scotland and I live in Wisconsin. How do I reply?
I asked if I wanted her to drop it off this weekend.
I think you say, yes, I would love for you to drop it off this weekend.
That would be lovely.
Thank
I'd
you.
Just like to see you.
Thanks for offering to make the trip.
Why don't I swing by, actually?
Oh, no.
Because,
no,
frankly.
No, I think you let them make the trip. Although, I'm not sure right now you even can make that trip necessarily, but That's what I would say. I would say, great, bring it on over. I'm free all day Saturday.
I'll be here. And if you could bring me some, scotch too, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, and maybe some haggis and perhaps some 19th century golf clubs. I don't really know what Scotland has.
Yeah, well, here's what you want, John. You want iron brew.
I remember when we went to Scotland, Hank, like the first time we went like professionally and we toured in Scotland and everybody wanted us to drink iron brew. And I did drink it. And I think it's wonderful when a community has pride in its drink.
Yep.
The way that Waco, Texas has Dr. Pepper, the way that Atlanta has Coca-Cola, Scotland has iron brew. There's just the one problem, right? Like, and we don't have to say it out loud. We don't have to.
The physical reaction.
We don't have to.
Okay. I don't mind the taste. It makes my stomach feel very bad.
Oh my God. Yeah. I don't know if. It tastes fine on the tongue, but then like coming back up 4 minutes later, it's not great.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So just say, I'd love for you to come by Wisconsin. P.S. I live in Wisconsin now, so you may not be able to come, but it's clarity. Lovely to hear from you. It's a chance to reconnect, hopefully.
There it is. It's a chance to reconnect and say, hey, I know that it'll be hard to ship the high chair, but can you please ship the iron brew and whatever those good chips they have there are, and some tea, because we have terrible tea here in America.
I think that it's the amount of orange food coloring in iron brew that's the issue, because I kind of get a similar stomach ache when I drink Fanta or Orange Crush.
I get the same. Yeah, actually. Yeah. And I definitely get it from Mountain Dew, too.
No, I can drink Mountain Dew all day.
Oh, my tummy.
Oh, wait, are you talking about moonshine?
The stuff that you, where you put like a $50 bill on a tree stump and come back the next day, that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No. They call it that good old Mountain Dew and then that refuse it or few, I believe is the couplet.
Oh gosh. What I want is some pork pies.
Really?
Sorry. Now that's the stuff right there.
You should come. I mean, by the way, Hank, AFC Wimbledon have a new stadium where there are plenty of savory pies available. Oh, so
I love a savory pie. Do they have any vegetarian? Because I'm trying to eat less meat.
I don't know.
Maybe misses the whole point.
I haven't been able to go. So I'll report back when I am able to. Anyway, that reminds me that today's podcast is brought to you by Iron Brew. Iron Brew. It's Scottish. It's kind of, it's like a heavily caffeinated Fanta.
This podcast is also brought to you by the larger crocodilians. The larger crocodilians. They are less afraid of you than you are of them.
Today's podcast is also brought to you by Cameron. Cameron, also known as Hank.
That's not me. And this podcast is also brought to you by Alexei Leonov, the first person to create art in space. And apparently it almost didn't make it back to Earth, but we're not going to find out why until we listen to the most recent episode of The Anthropocene Reviewed.
Also, the first person, we're really heavily selling this free podcast.
Well, look.
We should probably be selling... the Anthropocene Reviewed book, available wherever fine books are sold.
Ah.
But Alexei Leonov also did the first spacewalk. In fact, he did the first spacewalk about 5 minutes before he made the first art from space.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Like he got back in and he started doing art, or he did it when he was in the space?
He got back in and he started doing art to calm himself down because he almost died while he was out there.
Ooh. Yeah. That sounds unpleasant.
The Voskhod 2 was a little bit of a stressful mission, Hank. So
nice
anyway,
to remember that there are harder things than getting hacked, like almost dying in space.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Alexei Leonov, just to be clear, made a choice to go to space. Like, he didn't have to become an astronaut.
You didn't have to start a YouTube channel.
We also have a Project for Awesome message from Nikki Satterland in Wisconsin. Nikki writes, "Hi, John and Hank. So much of my views on humanity, the universe, and my place in it come from this community, and it strikes me as weird that this can be the case when you don't know me. Not bad, just weird. Our worlds are colliding for a brief moment, and now I don't know what to say. Perhaps archipelago." That's a fun word. Thank you.
Archipelago.
Thank you, Nikki. It is a fun word. And I've always wanted to live in an or on... Around, I've always wanted to live on or around an archipelago.
An archipelago. Yeah. As long as there's like a good grocery store.
I feel like I would have been very happy living by the ocean, but I would have been much less productive. And in the end,
it's a great first line of a novel, John. Just start right there. Yeah,
well, I'll get to that. I'll put aside what I'm working on and focus on. I feel like I could have been very happy living by the ocean, which is actually, now that I've said it a second time, not that good of a first line for a novel.
I like it. I like it.
Hank, before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, I want to ask this question from Greta, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, by the way, shout out to my computer for lasting this whole time on 5% battery."
Yeah.
Greta writes, "Dear John and Hank, I've seen movies where people start fires using magnifying glasses, ?" I'm a generally anxious person, and thus whenever I'm wearing my glasses outside, I imagine the sun beaming through them and burning either myself or a plant.
Oh, gosh.
Is this possible, and why? Autocorrect thinks..." This is a great name-specific sign-off. "Autocorrect thinks I'm great, Greta."
That must feel good.
Yeah. People can't write your name without thinking how great you are.
You get a lot of text messages for great.
Yeah. "Hi, great. Since you spent $200 with Venmo this month."
Oh, gosh. I like that Greta is worried about burning their own eyes or a plant.
Yeah. Well, those are the two things to worry about, really. Like, you don't want to accidentally start a forest fire because your glasses have such high magnification. I am alive to that concern. And then also, you don't want to burn yourself. So, Hank, can I start a fire with my glasses?
You can, but not accidentally.
Okay.
So, your glasses are not designed to focus light in the same way as a magnifying glass. You can absolutely start a fire with a magnifying glass. And if you leave a magnifying glass like sitting the wrong way in a house, you can burn stuff. And so you got to be careful about that. Like if there's a big steady beam of light coming in and you just got really unlucky, then that absolutely can happen. But eyeglasses, unless they're very like very, very strong, I don't think even at any angle could concentrate light that much. But in general, because they're not designed to concentrate light, they're designed to bend it a little bit to correct for the, you know, deformations in your eyeball lens. But you can, if you really need to, one of the things I have read is that you can put a drop of water on your eyeglasses and you can use that as a way to sort of magnify the magnification. And then maybe you could use your eyeglasses to start a fire. But look, my plan is if I am in the woods and I need to start a fire, to look back at my past and to say, what giant mistake did I make in order to get here? Because it does not seem like something that would happen to me.
How did I get here without a lighter? And for that matter, how did I get here?
Yeah.
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 It's funny that our father is such a camper and fire builder and backpacker and, you know, like lived in a root cellar in New Hampshire for 9 months without interacting with anybody.
Just eating bird food.
Yeah. And we like cannot stomach the thought of sleeping in a tent for a single night.
Oh, my God. I'm done with that stage of my life. Last time I slept in a tent, I don't know, maybe, five, 6 years ago, I would felt so bad the next day. Oh. It hurt so much.
Yeah. No, it's not for me. Meanwhile, our father slept in a tent like 4 nights ago.
He did.
Know? And he's significantly older than we are. And yet,
as you might guess.
And yet, you know, he was able to like sleep in a tent, wake up in the morning and like go hike another 10 miles and then sleep in a tent, wake up in the morning. He's made of different stuff.
Yeah.
Now, Hank, I feel like I've been going first with the news from AFC Wimbledon of late, just because it's the start of the season.
You've been
it's so
excited.
Exciting.
Yeah.
But let's let you start this time.
Well, China's rover, the Zhurong rover, has finished its primary mission on Mars on August 15th. It completed 90 sols on the Utopia Planitia. So it's been there for 90 Martian days. So 3 Martian months, I guess. what is time? But in that time, it's driven across the landscape. It's studied some different features. It's made sure that all the scientific experiments are in order, taken some selfies, sent back 10 gigabytes of scientific data. And that was the plan for what it was supposed to do. But it is still operational, and it will continue traveling and studying different areas of Mars while the orbiter that was part of the mission, the Tianwen-1, does a global survey of the planet. And from mid-September to October, the rover will have to go into safe mode because of a solar conjunction where the sun is in between us and the Mars. Mm-hmm. And the Mars.
Yeah.
And so we can't talk to it.
Right.
But when that's over, the scientists behind Zhurong plan to send it towards a groove-like feature that's about a mile away. So it's going to go on a little journey. So it's finished its primary mission, but it is still operational, which is great news. And it's going to keep doing science there on the red planet.
Can you do a global survey of a non-Earth globe?
What do you mean, John?
Well, you said
you just answered your question.
I guess you can, right? Like if
it's a globe. If it's not an Earth, it's just got to be a glob.
If it's globular.
As long as it's globby enough.
That seems wrong. I'm going to Google globular and find out if that's wrong.
Well, no, that is wrong. But is globe?
No, it's globe shaped or spherical. That is exactly what globular means.
Really?
Yes.
That's not what I think of when I think of globular at all.
Me neither, because globular proteins do not look like Earth to me. But whatever, globular means. You know, we started out this podcast on a low and we're ending it on a high with me knowing the definition of globular. The news from AFC Wimbledon is discouraging, but also encouraging. So very frustratingly, midweek we played Gillingham or possibly Gillingham. Scientists are still debating what the town is called. And we were up 1-0 with like 3 seconds left in the game when Gillingham scored an equalizer on a ridiculous deflected shot that was just like pure sheer stupid luck. And what are you going to do? And then we played Sunderland away from home. And, you know, Sunderland are expected to probably win the league this year, although they've been expected to win the league for the last few years and haven't managed to. And they're very good, and they have a much higher budget than we do. And we were definitely not as good as them. Like, watching the game, I was like, Sunderland are better. But we were in the game, in the whole game. And I think it would have been a 0-0 draw, except for another ridiculous, you know, once in a blue moon deflected shot that just happened to bounce the right way and go into the goal. So we lost that game and we tied the previous game, which means that after four league games, AFC Wimbledon have 5 points. You get 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw. So we've had one win and two draws and one loss. I mean, if we keep that basic number the same all through the season, we'll be fine. And that'll be great. Yeah. And I would be very happy.
Well, especially when that Gillingham game should have been a win.
It was very winnable. It seemed very winnable to me. So
you had 16 shots to their 5.
Yeah, we outplayed them. But then Sunderland, I mean, really did just play us off the pitch. It felt like to me.
Well, that'll happen.
So we'll see. Well, you know, I still feel really encouraged, though. Like, Ayuba Sol is incredible. I mean, he might be the best player in all of League One. He's just incredible. At some point, clubs in higher leagues will recognize that he's incredible.
Notice?
And he will no longer be an AFC Wimbledon player. Uh-huh. But for right now, he's something special. So it's a joy to watch him. And in general, like, you know, the way that they're playing is much more entertaining and fun to watch than in previous seasons. So hopefully that'll also lead to some good results down the road.
All right. Sweet. Well, I'm looking forward to them continuing to play good sports and you getting over there to have some fish and chips and meat pies at Plow Lane, John.
Oh, I can't
wait. I'd love
to
come with you, even.
I can't wait.
Thanks for making a podcast with me. If you want to send us questions, you can do that. We are at hankandjohn@gmail.com, a email address that is unhackable. I challenge any hacker to come.
No, 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 no. It's... No.
Definitely.
God.
Please, wrong call.
Please just don't. You know, like, yeah. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, gosh, that took me a while to learn. We're off to record our Patreon-only podcast this week in Stuff. You can find out more about that at patreon.com/DearHankandJohn. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna Medish. It's produced by Rosiana Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Julia Bloom. Our editorial assistant is Tabuki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown, don't forget to be awesome.